Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Big Blend Radio. Today, we're super excited to welcome an English solo artist, Tim Arnold, to the show. He's got his new album that actually, as we're recording it, it is going live now. It is called Super Connected, and we love it. And there's a whole video thing that goes with this, like a movie, really. God, you've got to go check it out. Go to his website, timarnold.co.uk, and go get it. He's got an actual video that is part of a bigger feature, as I was saying, called Start With The Sound, and you're going to want to check that out. But welcome to the show, Tim. How are you?
I'm really well. Thank you, Lisa. Lovely to meet you.
You too. I got to have turquoise and blues all around because, like, you have blue hair, and I want blue hair now. Like, really. So why blue? I have to go right there.
Oh my gosh. Well, I think when I first started writing Start With The Sound, I began writing a kind of video, music video script. It wasn't a full film at that point in my head. And I just wanted to create a story about a musician who kind of lost touch with music and would find like a tech company that were going to provide him with all the answers to connect him with music again. And of course, their way of doing this would be to kind of enable you or anybody to put on this sort of tech helmet, you know, like a headset, that would then make you become whatever it is that you dream of becoming, you know. And so in this musician's life, he would turn into a kind of 70s glam rock star, you know. And so, of course, David Bowie was an obvious choice for that. And I'd been working with David Bowie's movement director and Lindsay Kemp a few years into working on this album project. And he really inspired it as well. But of course, you know, looking back on the Life on Mars video, it's like, yeah, well, I'm not going to do a character that has red hair because it's too similar. And I thought, well, yeah, he didn't do blue. And as far as I could remember, there weren't any blue haired 70s glam rock stars. So I thought we'd try that and see what it looks like. And it's stuck ever since. Looking my glasses off. And you know, that's how we filmed it. So the character, I think not many people, but some people might think that it's me on the front cover with the blue hair, and it's me playing a character very much, which is sort of Trojan horse, because the tech company and the fictional story is only really doing this to gather data and information about the person that tries on their new gadget.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Just like social media, right? It's like one big algorithm. One big algorithm, really. And I wonder even about that word, like how it connects with music in a weird way. It's like everything has some kind of wave, a sound wave, and how it's collecting our data. They're using that. And even every notification has a beep. So are we listening to the little tings and beeps more than we are music?
That's right. Sound has become a kind of notification to many of us. And I think that's why on the last song on the Super Connected album, I decided to use those sounds in a way, you know, there's sounds of like Skype, WhatsApp, Facebook, Messenger, iPhone noises. And I worked on them for about a week, trying out all these different rhythms and patterns in a way to try to reclaim the sounds away from how we experience them. We experience them as something that makes us jump and think, oh gosh, I've got to do this, or it's a reminder to do something or answer somebody, have to respond all the time. And I thought if I could just try to make a tune out of it, then maybe it's like reclaiming it a bit. But, you know, it's pretty powerful what those companies have done with using those sounds. So I think when people hear the last song on the album, they usually jump to get their own phone.
Oh my God. But it's so weird. Like even before we were talking about like before we recorded about what's happening with even music channels and streaming. And I'm glad to see that you're doing vinyl with this and CDs, because the streaming thing is I have to watch my language. I'm trying, but damn it, man. It's good. I get it for showing popularity and for getting gigs and
I've been
and all
there,
that.
Lisa. I know where you are.
I can't help it. I just want to call BS when it is.
Mm-hmm.
Is that polite?
I'll just grab something quickly. That I always wanted to make this record very much as something you could hold. You can't hold the stream, but you can hold a vinyl or a CD, compact disc, or even a cassette.
Right.
And it's funny you saying that. When I send out the albums, which I do personally, I've got these little cards where I sort of put the name of the person that's purchased the record. But underneath it says, and I really believe this, taking my art in your hand means you have had a hand in making my art.
Oh.
And it's exactly that. If you stream my music, it's great for you. And it's great for the company that you have a subscription with. But if you buy my record or you buy my CD, it's great for you and it's great for me as an artist.
Yeah, but you have something tangible too, so it means something.
Yeah. It really means something. And it's I think it's there is something about the phenomenological world, that we're losing a little bit of late. It doesn't mean we've lost it forever, but at the moment, I think it's
I think we need to speak up.
Yeah.
And be loud about it. And I think, I love this music that you're doing and that other musicians are kind of going, hello, let's call it what it is, and I think you're really right about having a hand in art, because when you perform live, right, you have that energy of the audience. There's a tangible energy that you can touch and feel. And it's the same thing when you have a vinyl or you take it at the record out of the sleeve. You can smell the actual album, where it's been. Was it in a musty place? There's something good about musty albums that no one can ever tell me it's wrong. It's like, I don't care. I want the mold. But
it's the same as with books as well. You go into the smell of history on something is lovely. I love that.
But that's an energy. Whereas streaming, it's kind of like a flat. By the way, everybody go stream the album. But it's kind of a flat thing. There's a weird lack of. I don't know how to explain it, and I would love a scientist to get into this.
I'll tell you something. There's lots of different reasons why there are problems with streaming, and to be fair as well, there's always problems with anything when it begins.
There
was this thing called cigarettes that was really cool in the 1930s.
enjoyed them when I was a teenager, and then I got into trouble way too much. Not good for
but
me.
Historically, this was a cool thing when it started, and everyone's encouraged to do it. Even doctors were saying, try the smoke. But
asthma cigarettes. Do you remember those? They gave them asthma cigarettes. Hello.
Yeah. But with streaming, I think the one thing that I found really, as a musician, a bit worrying, or not as a musician, as a songwriter, was that what I discovered was that, a songwriter or music creator, let's call it, which widens it out a little bit, will get paid for a stream of their song, one stream of their, but actually, it's as long as it's played for 30 seconds, right? So mathematically, if your song is 10 minutes long and someone's listening to that all the time, you're going to make a lot less money than someone whose song is only 3 minutes long. Are you with me? Are you following me?
Oh, see the mathematical algorithm of BS.
So the mathematics is encouraged. If you're incentivized by making money, which I'm not, but most artists in the popular realm are, I wouldn't call myself a pop artist, but it just means that if you have an album full of 2-minute songs, you're going to make a lot more money.
Oh, we're back to the old school radio. Old school radio again.
Exactly. And it's Drake, of course, who had that album that I forgot the name of, has like 20 songs on it, but they're all 2 minutes long. Some of them are 1 minute long. I can't imagine why he made a song that short.
But to me, and that's a thing, like I always thought, like I love old school late night radio hosts, like, and we travel the country full time, and America's a big darn country, and you can tell when you cross a county line and or a village line in your country, right, in England. We still live in England too, and you can see that they start repeating the same playlist of songs, and we could go through three or four states in one day because we do marathon drives, and we'll look at each other, Nancy and I'll look at each other. We just heard that. And it's really the same song over and over until you get to a college town. Then you get public radio and you get college students who take over and say, beep, beep, BS to that. Let's do this. And here's some new stuff. And you're like, or really old stuff from the archives, the B-sides, the 7 minute songs. I'm like, thank you. I want that. Because why should an artist be told, like a painter, you must only paint 8x4. It's like our books when we printed our magazines.
Yeah.
Oh, you must stick to this.
I think that's the point of, as well, is that what you're talking about is very much to do with there's music as pop that is thought of as something, I don't know, disposable and a commodity, and then there's music as art. And what's the strange thing?
You're art. You are 100% art to me. Integrity,
which I sort of hope so, because that's the music that I grew up listening to was like that. And it's really kind of you to think of my music like that. But I think the older I get, the more I see how the 60s and the 70s and a little into the 80s, I think as well, is the exception, you know, those artists that broke through with an entire lyrical, conscientious approach to the world,
counterculture
is not the norm. And of course, I thought it was the norm. And so
I grew up with it. I grew up listening to it because of my mom, and it's like, and my friends' families, you know, and it was like, oh, this is the best thing. Even though I was living in different countries, that was like the pioneers. And it was only later that I realized, oh, these were the pioneers, you know. But I lived in
the business wasn't fully formed then, and it's only since the business has become such a
good point.
I think Bowie explained it in one of his last interviews, no, an early interview in 2000, I think, and he discussed the fact that he got into music in the 60s to affect change, because you could really affect change in society at that time. But even in the year 2000, he said, I wouldn't get into music now though if I wanted to affect change. That's 23 years ago, you know. So how it is now is kind of that, like, people certainly of my generation who've been making records for a long time are like, gosh, we got stuck in a difficult space. But I think what's good at the moment though is that even though the mainstream has a very limited choice of music and artists to choose from, there is more music being made than ever before, and there's more, and more talent has more outlets. So I think it depends what channels you look through. If you look through the mainstream channels, then
you're limited.
People like you and me will be very disappointed. But I think we have to look in those other spaces and realize, you know, wherever Pink Floyd sprung out of, and wherever Bowie sprung out of, in those amazing creative pools of the 60s and the 70s, they exist. They're just not covered by the mainstream anymore. That's all.
If you're gonna get Pink Floyd, it's just like another brick in the wall, like over and over, and it's like, Jesus Christ, it's like they did so much more. David Bowie did so much more than what you hear, you know. I mean, God, he did. I still find songs that I didn't know about, like from Bowie to this day, that I'm like, holy crap, he did that? Oh, yeah. And then I get it. It's like a rabbit hole. And I love it, because that's what I really love about your music, is like it just took me home immediately when I listened. I'm like, like, I just feel like this is at home, but it's so new and fresh and timely. And timely is important because we talk about affecting change. You know, basically, it's a pain in the ass to affect change, right? That's the biggest thing. Yeah. But music and the arts, whether it's writing, film, painting, artists tell the truth of time. They do. It's honest. When I mean true art is honest, it's integrity, and you suffer for it. Sorry.
Yes, you do. Yeah. I mean, I hadn't realized until recently, but just and I don't say it from a position of poor me, because I really love the path and the journey that I've chosen in my life. But yeah, I've sacrificed an awful lot to do the work I've done. So then, of course, when I was presented with the way popular music has been, I don't know, co-opted and commoditized, you get a little bit frustrated because you realize how much of
the man,
well, of what you could have in society in your lifetime that I could have had that I haven't, because I kind of made sacrifices to follow my artistic they're not even ambitions, but just the need to explore what I feel about the world and myself and in relation to it. And that very much came into being on this album, and that's probably why I could have released it 4 years ago, and I could have released it 3 years ago or two, and I just kept building it. So it's quite a beast of a.
It's a work of art.
It feels like it, and it feels like it's not mine as well. There's so many different people involved in it. Is that a real?
Well, when you watch the video, and everyone go to Tim Arnold's YouTube, and, you know, go to his website and then go to YouTube and go get the album and everything from there. But when you go and watch the video, and I know now you've got a bigger production, which I want to know how we can all tap into that. But when you watch that and you see how many people are involved in this video, it felt like you're part of, like, it took me through so many different movies. And at the same time, I thought, he's going to get the probe. Somewhere's going to happen. The probe's coming. But it just, to me, was a very big wake up. When you have the white rooms, the white rooms, like the white coats, anything with a white coat, I'm running to the hills. Give me Kate Bush. I'm going running up that hill. I'm gone, you know? So the white coat thing, like, it's there, but it's like, I feel like it is, we've got to get down to it. I was saying before we recorded, like, you know, Nancy and I, we travel the country documenting parks and land, and we did this in Africa and Kenya, South Africa. We just, it's always been who we are. And when you talk about music, like, I feel like we're copying nature in a very synthetic, inorganic, inorganic, I don't know what the word is, but it's horrible how we're, like, I understand recording sound and synthesizing. I get all that on the musical side. But all the notifications we get on phones and all of what we're doing is taking away from nature. So, like, let's even think about an alarm clock. Who the hell wants a bing, 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 bing to wake up to? That's like when you're a baby coming out and you're being born. They slapped you at the beginning. They didn't slap me because I apparently talked before I got slapped, because apparently I talk a lot. But when you think about waking up in the morning, if you listen and we have the birds outside our window, and some people don't have that blessing of birds outside their window. Some people hate the birds outside their window. And I go, okay, you've kind of lost that connection now. You want your phone to do that, you know? So if we keep distancing ourselves from nature, how, and we're going more into the phone, more into this technology, when I think technology can do an amazing amount of goodness too. So I'm not anti-progression and all of that. But you see what I mean? It's just, I feel like we've kind of lost balance, and we need to go back to nature, because we need that balance to balance, like, even breathing and stuff. Eventually, like, we've got to think for ourselves. We got to get our hands in the dirt.
I really agree with what you say about nature, because weirdly, obviously, the album is all about the problems that I did have and had and do have still to a degree with the technology, social communication technology, social media, emails, text message, all this kind of stuff.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, I mean, really serious problems I have with it. And and of course, because of releasing the record finally, I've had to re-enter that world.
Yeah.
And I found it has been responsible for physical ailments. And this is not an exaggeration, but this, the you know, I've been with a sort of a movement therapist, and you know, holding something like this, we're closed, our body is closed, you know.
That's
when
good
you're
point.
Like, your arms are kind of like this, and I really wish they'd hurry up with the Tom Cruise Minority Report thing so we can just do that, you know, with the screen. so I think that's just the body, what it does to the mind, you know. Maybe not for everybody, but for me, and certainly the people that I came into contact with when I was researching the different mental health disorders and challenges that people have had because of technology communications, is extraordinary. I mean, it's so complicated, and it really is like something that I think Edward Snowden said, with technology, we often we always wonder if we could do something, but we never ask if we should. You know.
Ooh.
And I think a little bit of that has happened, certainly in terms of younger people that inspired the me writing the album of Super Connected, has very much you know, been harmful, I think, to a lot of youngsters who haven't finished developing, you know, in their brains. And that's when I went to Italy in 2016 to do a concert in Verona, and friend had invited me, and he's a neuropsychotherapist, Ricardo, and he just told me that his job had really turned into going and counseling teenagers who would not leave their bedroom, would not go to school, their parents didn't know what to do with their kid, but they were absolutely locked into their, you know, the world of social media. And this was more and more at that time. That was probably 2016. And I started writing about all the songs on this album then.
Wow.
And then when you get to the pandemic, I just suddenly realized I can't talk about this. Because it was questioning our use of screens and technology. And so, of course, in lockdown, you couldn't
really. Yeah, but it's like now we get to talk and actually see each other and have these conversations without a,
absolutely,
you know, which is amazing. So there's this extra form of, you know, there is energy, you know.
Yeah.
But the pandemic, I think, was really scary for teens and kids, because they were doing school on Zoom or whatever, and half of them were going, oh, I can't be there. And they were really texting. They were on their phones. They were like double timing almost, and playing games. And we do a lot of mental health show, like it's so important to do. And we just keep doing it because relationships, I watch people go out to a meal. It's like you're finally allowed to go to a restaurant after all these years, right? 2 years of none of that, right? Go out to a restaurant and you're texting each other from your damn table. Like, let's order from a QR code. I understand during pandemic times.
But it's
nuts.
It's very empowering. I think mobile phones have become very empowering. And I think for people who don't have problems about their power in the world, that's not a big deal. You know, I've met various politicians who are very comfortable, quite wealthy, and it doesn't mess with their daily the way they go on.
Well, our politicians are too old to even use them.
So,
they're like, I'm just like, dudes, come on, and women, can you just move on, get on with it? Because how do we make change?
But I think, yeah, right. But I think the people that those of us in society who who don't have a lot of power and don't have a say and
a support.
And support are really married to their phones. And one thing that I'm doing next week, I'm doing an album launch and the film premiere at the Roundhouse in London. And we've teamed up with a company called Yonder, who create phone-free spaces. And what that means is, in a nutshell, is when you come to the venue and you show your ticket or you buy your ticket, they take your phone for a moment and they put it in a pouch and then they lock the pouch and they give you the phone back. And then you go into the venue. So it's not like your phone's been confiscated. It's still on your person. You have your phone, but you can't use it in the performance space. And it's not a restriction. Like, I'm not using it, but I'm not saying you can't use your phone. I'm saying I can't do my show.
If you're doing this.
Yeah, I can't do it. One reason is I'm autistic, and I only found this out recently, and it has been a massive part of my ability to concentrate in anything when there's many things happening at the same time, unless it's music, which is the opposite. Music is the thing that it can be all kinds of music going on. And that's very self-regulating for me. But yeah, it's actually to help me perform. But also, you're watching a film and you're listening to a guy perform an album live all at the same time. You've not heard the songs. You've not seen the story of the film. It's quite a lot. So if you're checking your mobile phone for like the football results in the middle of the show or taking a photo, you're going to...
So you're damn rude.
You're going to miss... Well, I don't think... it can be seen as rude.
It's rude. I'm sorry. Back in the day, there was like, you don't even go to the bathroom during a performance.
Absolutely. I think it depends what kind of work you're doing. And I keep saying this to everybody that's asked me, what's it going to give my phone over? And I was like, yeah, it's not that I'm advocating that all live events should not have mobile phones. My one on this occasion is that. And I'll
it's
do
a special occasion too.
Special occasion.
You're the whole movie is going to be behind there. So like you're performing.
Yeah, I'm singing.
Tell me about that. Like, Oh yeah. How's that going to work? Like, and how do, I mean, can we watch this full film afterwards? Like, I want to know. I'll watch it on my phone. I'm kidding. I won't. I'll at least increase it to the computer or TV.
Yeah, when I was beginning, when I finished the album and thought, great, I'll release the album. And then I thought, no, I won't, because many people probably won't be able to listen to it from beginning to end, because not many people do now. And it was a kind of idea of how could I get everybody to experience the whole album? And I just thought, nobody has a challenge watching an hour of Netflix. It's really easy, right? You don't need to say, please watch the episode until the end. You know, it's not a challenge, is it?
I listen to the whole album. I think you do.
But I think there are some...
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Life is busy. And I think a lot of people would like to listen to a whole album. It's just changed. So I thought, well, it's relaxing watching a drama these days, I guess, in the way it was relaxing to listen to a whole album in the 70s. And I'd already started writing a story to the songs. So I thought, I'll wait to put the album out and I'll work on this film. And by the love of a community of new and old friends, I managed to make this film drama, which I ended up acting in as well, which I wasn't intending to do.
Oh, come on. Yeah, that's cool, though.
Well, my producer said to me, I said, do you think I should do this part? And she said, if you don't feel comfortable with doing it, I think you probably should.
Exactly.
So that's my dear friend Nim. And the film has no words. So it's a silent movie set to the album in sequence, very similar to Pink Floyd's The Wall, which of course has some little bits here and there of dialogue, but not really. It's mostly all the songs in sequence. So that's how I knew it might be possible. And so of course, originally I just thought that would go on to like Netflix or Amazon or something like that. But I honestly, I just didn't, I haven't been able to find anybody in the British music industry or film industry who could
pioneer. Yeah, see, but that's the thing. That's the thing. And you do something new, it's like,
yeah, and it's
how dare you? You need to, everybody else has to do it before you can do it, right?
Exactly. Well, no one's really doing that, Tim. And I take that always.
But that's a compliment.
Okay, I can go to my grave knowing that I'm feeling happy. You know, I was doing something.
Well, as you're tired, this really came to mind of, and even some interviews I just recently did with musicians kind of in this space of going, like, this is BS what we're doing, right, in the world. And there's so many different ways, whether it's climate change, whether it's technology, AI, algorithm, BS, how streaming. I mean, there's, so people are standing up and musicians. So I kind of feel like Nancy and I were talking about this the other day. I kind of feel like we're going back to the 80s in a weird way. So 80s music sound is kind of merging with some of the old rock and blues and everything, but there's this interesting pioneer thing. Like, and I said, you know, so sampling is really using new sounds is becoming the new wave of people capturing new music. And I'm like, this is going to be what happens now. However, the musicians now are like, it's like punk is in there, like the attitude is in there. And it can even come out in classical music, punk, in a way of like, I'm going to wake you the hell up, right? And so I kind of feel like everything's merging into this little storm of like, wake the hell up. And I feel like that is what's happening with music now. And it's coming from, it's weird because we have the internet and technology that opens up all this creativity, yet is insanely restrainative. It's like being in a prison and not being able to perform. I feel like everyone's rebelling right now. It's good in a way. It's more creative stuff happening because
I really agree with what you're saying about it being a time with the most incredible opportunities being made available, but somehow the freedom to use them is not quite as tangible as we'd hope it would be. And in that way, it reminds me of the ring in Lord of the Rings, you know, with this incredible object of power that can do anything. It can work for good or evil, right? And of course, the weight of it is enormous if you are trying to do good with it, you know, like we see Frodo has. It's this the pressure to stay good with this thing. And I think it's very similar with AI and all of those things. I mean, on this album, I think it's not the last one. The just right at the end of the album, there's a song called Where Am I in All of This? Which I think began very much as a sort of autobiographical thing of, where am I in? Literally, it was a real thing. But the last lyric of that is... I can't take any more today, and I can't fake it's not here to stay. That's really about data colonialism, and that's what this is. We had slavery.
That's a really good term.
It's not my term.
Colonialism. Love that term. I don't like it because I don't like what it stands for, but it's true.
Well,
Holy crap.
Data colonialism was coined by a professor of media studies at the London School of Economics. He's called Nick Cauldry. And he wrote a book called The Costs of Connection. And of course, I discovered this book halfway through writing Super Connected and reached out to him. And I interviewed him on my own podcast.
Oh, cool. And tell everybody where to get your podcast.
Yeah, my podcast is called Super Connected Conversations. It's on all the places where you hear.
Okay.
But there's one episode with Nick Cauldry. And he wrote this book called The Cost of Connection. And it really argues the case very successfully for that the original slavery that we know from the 16th century and before, predominantly obviously in Britain and America, is basically the same system that corporate tech companies with data. Our data is now the value, that's the gold, but we are the slaves, you know. And it's not a it's not a fantastical sort of sensationalized account. This is like years and years of research of one of the London's most like preeminent economic professors. I mean, he's a bit of a genius, Nick. And so that really opened my eyes to the fact that it is something that's gone too far. And I don't think it's like there's a dastardly baddie, you know, behind it all, like a Bond villain, you know, like in the James Bond film. There's like
it's a collective. I think it's a collective.
It's also just happened. And it's also a system, and systems come into place. And if you work in a system and it's your job and your children being fed depends on you being in that job in that system, you don't question it very much. That's normal, you know. I don't like to blame other human beings. I think all of us as human beings are capable of the same beautiful or horrific behavior. And if it's horrific behavior happening, it's because there's a system being put in place, which we've kind of not noticed because we've been in it too long. And I think most of the songs on To Be Connected are kind of about my battles to get to that point where I was cross with other people. Why are you communicating like that? Why do you like it when I share this but you don't like that? And eventually I realized, hang on, this isn't them. This is the system that we've been put in. By who? Not another person. It's the system itself, you know.
It's messed up. And your lyrics, by the way, that is one of my big draws to your music, is your lyrics. Your lyrics, because they're not over fanciful, and it just, like, I think it is such a talent to be able to musically get under your skin with something so, like, boom, you get it, you know. And when you go, like, here it comes, like, when I was listening to that, I was like, you could take that in so many ways depending on what you're going through in that day. Like, it could be, okay, here comes the deluge of notification. Here comes the emotional feeling of all this crap. You know it's coming, like, oh God. You know what I mean? It's like, or it could be the high people get off of notifications. Like, oh, I got 10,000 on my TikTok. Oh, and then let me delete this post because it only got 100. Like,
yeah.
What the...
And that's the thing, isn't it?
This is the sickness we have. And our kids are going through it. They're becoming YouTube stars, which, fine, you found something, but what is of substance? Yeah, that's what I want.
I think that's a really good word, substance, because it's once they pull the cord on the internet, all of these dependencies are gone, you know. And so... What is a substance that really, and you know what I found more than anything else with doing work online or operating in the social media sphere, or the digital hemisphere, is that time just gets eaten.
Mm-hmm.
And when you stop, I've do like digital detoxes regularly, have done
for nice
4 years, I suppose. And I'm getting time back. So it's like I get so much more out of a day.
Like, can you just enjoy a cup of tea and actually enjoy a cup of tea in a book and just watch someone go down the street or look at a bird out the window, or, you know what I mean? Where you actually take a walk without having a phone in hand and walking into a street lamp.
And I think, you know, this, someone listening to this will think, not everybody, but some people will think, oh, it's like anti-tech. It's like, it's not anti-tech.
No, there's good uses with it.
Yeah, it's about being aware of how we are with tech. There was an amazing philosopher guru from the early 20th century that I discovered by reading about in a Kate Bush biography when I was 12.
Oh.
And he's called Gurdjieff. And Gurdjieff talked about, and this is like over 100 years ago, and he talked about how we are as human beings with every single thing we do, even if we do something new, quite quickly become robotic in it. and it's a habit. And he developed all these exercises. Even now I'm doing that with my hands, and he would say, what happens in your brain before you even lift a hand to do it, that it goes that way? And that, you know, it's like every little bit, it's, you know, it's really scientific, to be honest. But I think really it's quite a value at the moment in understanding just how much we're doing robotically. I mean, when I'm on this, it's a choice. I've got another phone, which is a dumb phone, they call it, which doesn't have any internet on it. You know, it's a mobile, old-fashioned mobile phone. So depending on what I'm doing, I'll have this one, or I'll have the dumb phone. But on this one, I'm really aware I'm doing stuff so automatically that I'm not surprised that I'm mentally drained at the end of the day, and feel physically sort of depleted as well, because I've been in the same robotic kind of.
Well, I've done tests on this, because, you know, as we travel, like right now where we are, we're on a waterfront. I'm looking past you, I see a river, and there's a pair of ospreys taking care of their nest, eggs. You can come here, you know. But, and I mean, it's beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous, and very lucky to be here. But to be in nature, suddenly, this calm took over my phone. Now, if I'm in a busy space, my brain is very ding bad. It goes ding, ding, ding all the time. I'm like one of those people. And then I crash, boom, because my body says, you're going to go down, girl. You're going down, right? And to wind my brain down, like after interviews and magazine deadlines and travel, I need to how do you unwind? Well, you're on your phone. And do you really sleep after that? So here we are, this Lakeview, everything. My body has just said, you're sleeping here. You're sleeping. You're going to bed early. No, I don't care. You're supposed to work, because I've been working crazy hours lately. And it's like, no, I'm not on my phone. Like, I try to do something, and it's like, no, you're going down. The power of nature. So it's kind of these interesting, and I do this as we travel. And I wonder about that, about us as society getting away from having some, I'm going back to the nature thing. As we separate ourselves from part of our heartbeat, we're screwing up. So I'm not saying that if we live in flats.
I love that. I love that. You refer to nature as part of our heartbeat.
We are connected. We are part of trees. Absolutely. Part of our DNA is connected to trees. So as we cut them down, like I've been in places where I start getting really upset and emotional. I'm going, oh, what? You know, don't look at me just because I'm a woman that way. No, not you. I'm just saying, it's not that. And I'll go around the corner and they're cutting a tree down. And my body knows, and I'm very, very connected with nature. I grew up in the bush, you know, and I'm just that way. And whenever you put me in society, I start to rebel and become quite an idiot. It's not natural, I don't think, for us to box ourselves up. You know, we live in condos and flats, apartments, wherever we are in the world. Have some plants, put a patio garden, do what you can, have community parks. I don't care if it's 10 feet wide. We create these dead zones in our life, and then we put technology on top of it. We need that balance, is all I'm saying. I think that's what the conversation, it's not like anti-everything. Yeah. It is called finding the balance.
Absolutely. And also, it's I grew up for in an area of London called Soho. You probably
heard
of Soho. My mum and my grandfather both lived there as well. And I wasn't born there, but I ended up going there because of the family roots, and I felt connected. And one of the things I used to talk about Soho was when it started being kind of pulled down a little bit, and we lost a lot of amazing music venues and cultural spaces.
Oh, really?
It really contributed historically. Yeah. And one of the things I used to talk about was what made it somewhere that everybody loved was its variety and diversity. So yeah, there were Italians. Yes, there were Turks. Yes, there were Hungarian.
That's awesome.
Greek.
God, that means you have good food everywhere.
Yeah, coffee shops, film industry, music industry, theater land.
That's vibrant.
It's like everything. And And I think it's the same with all life. The key to, I think, a really balanced life that we
it's diversity exist, on everything
that we can exist in our natural state in effectively is when we don't sort of have this absolutist idea that everything should be one way, because it's a little bit like that with what I'm talking about on the album. Many of these tech companies that that govern a large proportion of our lives tell us how we should communicate and how we shouldn't communicate. And well, the thing is, they're not wrong about their way. They're not. But it doesn't cancel out the other way. And so what we learned before the digital revolution isn't null and void. We can bring that as well. And that's kind of where I'm coming from with SuperConnected.
I think you use what the tools we have for betterment.
Yeah. It's not about replacing one with
the other. I really want to go on this diversity part where you're talking about, because we are the big blend, right? And our thing is everything is connected. Like I'm talking to you about trees when we're supposed to be talking about music, but we're talking about digital, we're talking about mental health. We're going everywhere because it's balance, a balanced life. They tell you, don't put one thing on your plate. We know from agriculture, big crops, like one crop that grows in one area devastates the soil, right? It doesn't do well. Whereas a farm that rotates crops and has a diversity of crops does very well, and it's healthier for us eating it, right? So we're the big blend. So marketers want us to be, you're doing a little bit of everything, not good enough. We want, for investment and marketing and all that stuff that we have to survive on. We want this, we want that. And so we're a big blend. And then we go, okay, well, here's our travel podcast and our travel magazine. Here's our food magazine. And it does very well because everybody loves this. So then we were like, well, we're sneaking back into the field. Let's do our daily big blend podcast of a little bit of everything. And what happened? Oh, yeah, went very well. And I'm like, oh, yeah, watch this. So now we're launching a whole new thing with it. And we're back to being the blend. And we have to now diversify everything and still go back to our roots and balance. Because deep down, how do you introduce something new to somebody? I think that's a very hard thing for musicians and artists. You love music. How did you listen to the first song of the artist? If not, once you like the artist, then you're going, oh, we want something new. But to hear it for the first time, for me, I don't care. Someone's like, there's new music. I'm like, bring it, And sometimes you may not like it the first time. You may have to listen to it three times to go, oh, now I like it. All depends.
Oh, so many different factors with music.
Yeah, we just need to breathe in a bit, slow the hell down, accept diversity in everything, including technology.
Yeah.
Including how we handle the variety of what's happening in climate change solutions, including everybody is this absolutist. I think what you were saying about that, it's like, oh, it's one way, the highway. Bullshit. Sorry. It's not that way. It doesn't work that way because nature doesn't work that way. And the natural world is what we are living in.
And the other thing was, it's okay to be a human being who is conflicted. It's okay not to be able to make a choice.
Well, if you aren't feeling something, that's when you have a problem.
Exactly. And somebody said to me recently, oh, I thought you'd taken your music off Spotify. Which I did about 2 years ago. I took my whole discography off Spotify because they were investing in AI military companies. And I didn't like my music being in that space that was putting money into war or defense, whichever one they both belong with each other, don't they? So I haven't been on Spotify until now. And I had to go back on because nobody could find my music. Not everybody wants vinyl and CD. Not everybody wants to use Bandcamp. I'm conflicted. And that's where it's really important to go when someone says to you, well, do you believe in Spotify or don't you? I'm conflicted. And my music's on it. And that's okay.
So is our podcast. Yeah, I know.
That's human. It doesn't feel good that they invest in military companies and that my music's on it. I don't like it. I like that people can hear my music. That's
because that's going to make positive change. Yeah.
But what we're living in these days is like, you got to be on this route or that route. It's like, well, I'm a bit on the both routes at the moment, I'm afraid.
Oh, politically too. Like, the side or that side? No, like, I don't have pure blonde hair. It's dirty blonde. And sometimes in the summer, it goes like nice and brilliant. I'm just going to go get blue hair like you. It's like, it's far easier because it's like,
mine's natural though, of course.
Yeah. You know, but and you've got it like merged in, you know. But how dare you merge something, you know, and blend it in?
It grew like this. It's been like this since I was a baby.
Oh, really? What did you have? Blueberries as your first food element, you know? But yeah, I think it's just, God, I feel like we've forgotten to celebrate life and actually take a breath of fresh air and go outside, mm-hmm. enjoy the sunshine. And now it's spring, summer, depending on where you are in the hemisphere, though. Get out there and enjoy.
We're just starting to get sun here, so in London. So yeah, hopefully.
Where were you born in England?
I was born in the north of Soho. In the West End, yeah, in the Middlesex Hospital. But I grew up in North London until I was 8, and then I lived all over Europe, France and Spain. My mother's
sweet.
Yeah, well, she was a singer and an actress, and she retired now, but did a lot of cabaret and theatre shows all over Europe. So I grew up in a camper van for a year.
Oh, see, you're just like us. See, you understand the gypsy life.
But traveling the gypsy life is for me, yes.
It's awesome. It is awesome. You know, I did that in South Africa with Nancy, my mom. Normally she'd be here with us, but we're on deadline and went through internet hell. And so she's like, I got to get this magazine out. I'm like, all right, get it done. Let's just go outside in the sun. But we lived in England. That's what I was asking, because we used to live in England.
Oh, whereabouts? When I was a kid.
Southport.
Southport.
So it's up in the north. Yeah. And Preston. Tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. Apparently they give us the eyebrow and we're like, we didn't know. Like, we were just there. And then, yeah, we went from Kenya to England to South Africa. And we were there for about a year and a half and then came back. Then we lived in Guernsey in the Channel Islands for a little bit between South Africa and coming back to the States.
But when you were in Africa, did you travel through Zambia?
No, we didn't do Zambia. A little bit of Zimbabwe, mostly Kenya and South Africa, and then some of the African countries like the Transkei and Lesotho and Swaziland, but Tanzania.
I've never been to Africa, I really want to go, because my father was from Zambia.
Oh, wow.
I've never been there, so I want
to. Oh, you should go. Like, you know what? I keep thinking that, like, when you think about Freddie Mercury, like, I want to tell people, like, he comes from Africa, man.
I know. But
it's like, he was Zanzibar. And that's a crazy place, too.
You know, like, it's really amazing that you brought that up, Lisa, because I was a member of the Queen fan club.
Seriously. I
had a little membership card when I was 12, in 1987. And it was the first time I'm mixed race, but I kind of knew that, but didn't know it because my mum was white and my older brother was white. Everybody was white. So I kind of grew up thinking I'm probably white, really, when I was a kid. You know, I just didn't
know. No, you can't be. You've got blue hair. You're a blue hair.
Yeah, right. but I didn't know about, and I remember saying to my mum when I was very young, I said, God, I'd love to do something like Freddie Mercury when I'm older.
And look at you now.
And she said, well, he's not even fully, he's not English anyway. I didn't know. I was 12 or 13. And it kind of gave me confidence because I'm half Indian. And knowing that he was from Zanzibar just made me think, okay, so I can do rock and roll too.
Yeah, you can.
An amazing
and look at the Indian culture, what's happening now. Like, I mean, on,
it's incredible.
It is. And the rhythms, that's, to me, that's, you know, growing up in Africa, is the rhythm and the vocals are so powerful. And, you know, so it was just a really, I think with your music too, because we were so much on the, like, the music would come from Europe.
Yeah.
So you'd hear that sound in your sound. Like I said, that as soon as I listened, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm home. That's like my term of like, yeah.
Glad you like it. It's been a long time coming as well. I've made 3 other albums during the making of this album. I've released.
Oh wow, cool. 3 others.
So it's been a long time. It's really lovely meeting somebody for the first time, and hearing that it resonates with you.
Oh, it's like that was immediate. It was immediate from push play on. I'm like, oh, I'm in. You got me immediately. So thank you for joining us here on Big Blend Radio.
Thank you.
Everyone has to keep up with you. Everyone go to, let me get it right here. Wow, they're superconnected.technology too. Look at that. You got a technology link.
Well, it had to be really, didn't it, for that? But I think technology is what we've been doing for the last hour. That's the
reason. Listen, but this is the positive part, right? So that's the thing. Yeah. So everyone, timarnold.co.uk. Again, the album is Super Connected. Go to YouTube to watch the video we were talking about. Go check that out and stay in touch. And for people that are in the movie industry who understand all that stuff, get in touch with Tim because, you know... Seriously, it's so cool. Go to his YouTube channel. And then if you can get the album or the CD, that is preferred. And Bandcamp, they are the best streaming outlet for musicians, I'm just saying. And Bandcamp Fridays are the best. So check that out. So thank you so much, Tim. And stay in touch with your new albums.
I will. Absolutely. I look forward to talking to you again.